You are listening to Aloud, a program of the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. Visit us at lfla.org.
Thank you. That's very sweet. Good evening. I'm Jessica Strand, the Director of Public Programming here at the Library Foundation. And for those of you who do not know what the Library Foundation of Los Angeles is, we raise funds to support critical programs at the LAPL, programs which include Read Baby Read, Teens Leading Change, Adult Literacy, and even Tech to Go, which gives anyone with a library card the ability to take out a Chromebook and a hotspot. These programs and others are available to support and help all Angelenos across this big city. I'm very excited about tonight's bilingual program, which I hope will be the one, of many in the future. This evening, we're lucky enough to have the wonderful Salvadorian poet, Jessica Salgado, and the activist and founder of Nagona, Gloria Lucas. Each of these women looks at body image in our culture and stretches conventional thinking about what is attractive. At this time, where women's bodies are no longer completely their own, it's important to understand how we perceive ourselves and how the culture perceives and treats us. Now let me introduce tonight's distinguished guests. Jessica Salgado is a Los Angeles-based Salvadorian poet who writes about her family, her culture, her city, and her fat brown body. She has shared her work in venues and campuses throughout the country. Her books include Corazon, Tesoro, and Hermosa. Her work has been featured in the Los Angeles Times, Teen Vogue, On Univision, CNN, NPR, and TEDx, and many other digital platforms. Salgado is a two-time National Poetry Slam finalist and the recipient of the 2020 International Latino Book Award in Poetry. She is an internationally recognized body-positive activist and the writer of the column Sulta for Remezcla, right, okay. Thank you, I needed that. And she will be in conversation tonight with Gloria Lucas, who founded Nagona Positivity Pride in 2014 at the age of 24, struggling with an eating disorder and not being able to relate to the conventional narrative surrounding the issue, she decided to share her story with the world. Gloria has a background in grassroots feminist organizing, sexual health education, and HIV/AIDS services. With the help and support of family and friends, she was able to grow and impact the lives of thousands who have struggled with body image and eating disorder. Her areas of focus are eating disorder, harm reduction, size diversity, and colonialism. Her work has been featured on NPR, MTV, and PBS, and in Teen Vogue, the Los Angeles Times, and Bitch Magazine. She is the person behind Mujeres Market, Seeds from the Flesh, and co-owner of the Feminist Women of Color Biz Center. Please welcome Jessica Salgado.
¿Cómo estamos? There's a little bit of us, so I'm going to need y'all to give me a little bit more love. I bet you everybody else is running on Jessica time because I'm always late to things. Except when my manager makes lies to me so I could be here on time. She's like, we have to be there at 6. Psych, 6:45. So I'm going to start the night by reading you two poems. Is that okay? Let's get married where the jacarandas are. Let's get married when the jacarandas are in bloom. When the lotus flowers on Echo Park Lake have stretched into open hands. Make me yours during summer. Beneath the Dodger Stadium fireworks, the night air my veil, the 101 taillight sequining my gown, my bouquet a palm tree borrowed from Sunset Boulevard. Let a procession of lowriders, Priuses, and rapid buses lead us to our reception. 100 street vendors with their hot dogs or elote carts lining the street, feeding those that celebrate our love. Let's have our first dance to a Snoop Dogg song while the neon lights from a liquor store shadow your beautiful face. someone setting free a dozen ducks taken from MacArthur Park. Let's make Pershing Square our dance floor. Borrow the mariachis from their plaza, exposition park the centerpiece to every table, promise yourself to me on Slauson, on Cesar Chavez, on Temple, on Vermont, on Parkman. I have seen enough of the world to know that it has always been you. I return to you with open arms, my beautiful city, Los Angeles. I choose you in this life, in my parents' life, and in the lives they left to bring me to you. All of my poems are about love. All of my poems are about some boy. All of my poems are about my fat. All of my poems are about my Spanish, my El Salvador, my English, my Los Angeles, my pre-gentrification Silver Lake, my Echo Park before the food trucks and yoga parties, my belly swinging by the vegan restaurants, my double chin laughing in overpriced coffee shops, my minimum wage paycheck, my staying too long in too many places, my poor taste in men, my online dating, my hope, my ex-boyfriends, and their girlfriends who live next door, drama. My niece and her laughter, my niece and all of her questions, my niece and her hands pressed against my face, my niece and her hands wet with the tears on my face, my depression, my secret sadness, my ocean always asking for my body, my anxiety whispering my name at the nape of my neck, my hands, and how they listened and slammed against my body, and how no one ever saw the bruises because no one ever saw my body. All of my poems are about my brown girl body, my I have to fight to love it every day body, my big, fat, beautiful body, my red lipstick smile, my curly Salvadoran hair, my mommy's hair, and my hair, oh my mommy. My papi, my drunk and angry papi. My papi yelling out my name in the middle of the night. My papi and his belt against my skin. My papi's belt and how it whistled in the air before finding my skin. My long nights counting his snores. My grieving him 10 years before he died. My watching him die. My exhale when he died. My life after he died. My good life after he died. All of my poems are about my parents, my hard-working migrant parents, my hardly any English parents, my Saturday afternoon listening to Juan Gabriel parents, my early, early, early Sunday morning mass parents, my sisters and I in our prettiest dresses. Oh, my sisters, my first friends, my first lesson in getting the hell over it, my singing at the top of their lungs until mommy yells, shut the hell up, this isn't a musical, sisters, my hiding beneath my, I cut this line out, but I'm going to put it in right now. My hiding under my bed so they can shake it like it's an earthquake, sisters, my no one gets it like you do, sisters. You see, all of my poems, they're all about love. The times that it came in floods and the years, oh, those years that I forgot what love was. All of my poems are collection plates I fill and fill and fill and fill, and I have yet to come up empty. Thank God for my poems, for how they always find me, for this heart that believes them and these hands that always receive them. Gracias. Muchas, muchas gracias. Y ahora voy a sacar a Gloria Lucas. Come on out of here. Miss Nalgona herself. Hey, mama. Get up for her one more time. Thank you.
Super excited to be here. Thank you all for making the time to be here.
Thank you for joining me. I bet you that everybody's gonna show up like at 8 something and be like, what happened? The flyer said. How are you feeling?
Good. I'm feeling good.
Good.
So I think that we should start off by talking about when we met, how we met, because a lot of folks don't know that we've been friends for a while.
A long while.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've been friends since 2015. So whatever math, 7 years. There you go.
There you go.
So I'll explain how I met you, and then you could tell me your version of that. I don't think we've ever talked about like what we thought when we first met and all that. So I had been performing for a few years already at the Poetry Lounge on Fairfax and Melrose, right, in the spoken word community, the competitive poetry, which is SLAM. And it was beautiful, and it was a diverse group of people. But I felt like the Poetry Lounge is a predominantly Black community, which is really beautiful, and I'm so grateful for how they've fostered me, how they've uplifted me. Black women will always hold us down, right? And it was truly, truly beautiful, but I also knew that that wasn't my culture, right? And that I was just a visitor in theirs, and I honored that and appreciated the space they made for me. But I was just like, I'm in LA, like where are like the Latinas at, right? Like where are the LA Latinas? Like I wanna feel like a connection with like the kind of people that I grew up with. And so in that, it was when Tumblr was really big, and I ended up following Black Lotus Rosie. Mm-hmm. And they shared a flyer for a poetry night called Con Fuerza Collective at La Concha in Boyle Heights, which is where the ovarian cycles, they used to go by that, now they go by the ovas, that was their home. Mm-hmm. And I showed up to the open mic, put my name down, and I got called up to perform. I didn't know who anybody was, nobody knew who I was, but they knew my poem. When I started performing this poem that I have called Brown Girl, which is like an old piece, one of the first pieces I ever had up on YouTube, and I could feel in that moment them recognizing me and me recognizing that I had found my audience. It was such a beautiful moment in that moment. And I met Alma that way, and who's a poet. And then she reached out and invited me to Panza Palooza. I don't know why I said it like a white woman. Panza Palooza. Me invitó a Panza Palooza. See, you get, and I didn't know what. Oh, and I had already followed Gloria. I was following you on Instagram, on Tumblr, I think. I had gone on this whole thing where I was just like, I'm tired of hating my own body. I want to see myself out there. And in looking for people that looked like me, I found Alguna Positivity Pride, and how you were sharing all of this radical body positivity at the time. Like, it hadn't been co-opted in the way that it's been co-opted now, you know? So at the time, it was still very, very new and exciting and all of that. So then when I got invited to do something that your name was attached, I was there. There's a Facebook status. Oh. I did a Facebook status. So I'm like, my favorite account just invited me to go do something. I made it. Because at the time, that's what making it was for me. So I went to Panza Palooza. And if it wasn't for me going to that event, and if it wasn't for me seeing how you vend at things and how you build community, Chingona Fire would have never happened. Because you inspired me to create Chingona Fire. And Chingona Fire was a poetry open mic that I hosted with Angela Aguirre, another poet who came up in the same scene that I did and was wanting a lot of the same of what we wanted. So we created a woman and femme, a venue for marginalized identities. But a lot of the politics that I was using at Chingona Fire were things that I learned through my friendship with Gloria. Mm-hmm. So you've influenced me tremendously throughout my career. Ah, how many times am I going to cry today? But yeah, so then, and then after that, I'm going to run through it a little bit. We did the Panza Palooza, and then you asked me to model your shirt for you, and it was the first time I ever modeled for anybody. And so we were in Echo Park in my area, and we took pictures of me. What was the shirt?
It was Gorda, Nalgona, y Chingona.
Yes.
Yeah.
And back then, like now everything says that kind of stuff, right? Like everything's Chingona this, Chingona that, yeah. And Nalgona Panza. Like everything is everywhere, right? But at the time, everybody was just like, what are you wearing? And I was just like, it's not a secret. I got this panza going ahead of me everywhere I go. But you gave me permission in a way to like be seen in a way that I hadn't ever. And then que más después me llamaste de repente un día y me dijiste, oye, ¿qué estás haciendo, cabrona? And then I was just like, no, I'm just right here watching whatever I was doing. She's like, can you come to me? Univision is here and they want me to bring you for an interview. So the first time I was ever on TV was because of Gloria. Oh. So they were covering Algona Positivity Pride and they also wanted to have somebody else that had been affected by NPP. And so it was, I will yo. And then I'm like sitting there and I got interviewed and I remember they were telling me to like cover my panza. And I was just like, nah, like this is what I'm here for. The panza showed up. I so vine. And then, I mean, we'll get into our Oakland trip later. We went to Oakland on a mega bus. That was,
oh my God.
We'll get to it.
Yeah.
But okay. So where were you in 2015 when we met?
I think, you know, I was just starting Algona Positivity Pride. I'm originally from Riverside and yay. yes. And, so I had moved out here and honestly it was LA that helped Nalgona grow. I think Riverside gave me the tools, the skills to create something that honestly has not really existed.
No.
I don't know. I still sometimes don't know what I'm doing or what's the next step because there aren't any models, right?
Right.
And so it was moving here and then connecting that one night. And I remember when you did the spoken word, the whole room was quiet. You could hear crickets. It was, you dominated like that space in a way that was so sacred and definitely left an impact on me and everybody else that's there. And I was like, we have to like connect and here we are years later and still, you know, friends and helping each other. And it's been a big, you know, honor to see how much you have grown and, you know, your books are in so many homes and so many libraries and so many communities. And we didn't have that when we were growing up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like in many ways, ooh, cancer season. Well, no, I'm a chillona de todo el tiempo, so I don't know why I'm blaming cancer season. But we'll blame somebody today. But yeah, I mean, lo mismo puedo decir yo por ti. En muchas maneras, yo no me hubiera dado el permiso que me di de to be as unapologetic as I've been if I wasn't given the language. Like, I'm a high school dropout. I'm a high school pushout. I always try to correct that because the school systems make it where they make it easy for you to get pushed out. And literally at 18, I had a teacher tell me, like, you're not going to get anything else from this, so why don't you just go to college, go to community college? But the way that my life was set up was that wasn't gonna work for me. I started working and then that was it, right? So I there was so much information that I missed out on. Mm-hmm. So many things that I knew what it still happens to this day. Like, I know that I'm doing, I get it, but I just don't know how to give it the words to like, to make it viable to other people or to make it official or like, for other people to like accept it, you know? And the people that have made it that so that what I say can go farther are people like Gloria and people like y'all. Cause like, I'm like, you don't know what the fuck I'm saying, but they do. And they'll show up. So are you gonna give me the space or not, you know? But those are things I learned through you. Remember the first event we put together at La Concha?
Kind of. A really bad memory, but it was on dating, right?
Yeah, I was dating as a larger person.
Yeah.
But I remember when we were trying to name it, I was just like, yeah, just say like bad in dating. And you're like, no, because that doesn't apply to everybody. Like, you taught me to be meticulous about my words and about like naming exactly who I'm creating, to be that intentional, to know exactly who I'm creating something for and to have the language for that, right? And then like an accessibility and that responsibility of things where if we're looking for like a venue and you're like, if people don't fit
in like the chairs.
Yeah, if we're trying to do something for fat people and the chairs are tiny, like what are we doing?
Exactly. And I think that's something that just a lot of people forget about if you are truly about welcoming everybody, y quieres que todas las personas estén felices y contentas y se sientan seguros, tienes que tener un espacio que they could actually sit down, right? And those are things that people don't think about. But yeah, I mean, the details and the intention is very important.
And at first I was like, this girl.
You would be like, you're doing the most. I was like, that's exagerando. Like come
just
on.
Just put a flyer up already and like, we'll figure it out when they get here. And then she's like, no, we need to have a meeting. And so we went to a Thai restaurant to have a meeting. We were just talking about boys the whole time.
I know.
And then, and then we listened to La Bala.
Yeah.
If you're Salvadoran, you know La Bala? If you don't know, it's a Salvadoran hokey pokey. But it's like 12 minutes long. It's, they make you do everything. Even your, probably your taxes throughout the song too. And we were sitting in her truck like laughing.
I think we went on IG Live or something. Didn't?
And then probably.
Not with you. I think we did do an IG Live in
wait,
my truck.
Wait, this should be alive and then put it up. And
yeah.
Those are some wild times. I mean, it's still wild times, but.
Yeah. So tell me, yo quisiera saber, de niña, ¿qué fueron tus sueños? What was baby Jessica's dreams?
This. Like, I mean, I didn't know it was going to look like this. But, like, this library, every time I do anything here, it's always so emotional to me because, like, I used to leave my house to just get the hell out of my house because I had two annoying sisters. I'm the oldest, right? And they would team up on me. Oh, my sisters, I love them. But, and then like my dad who was an alcoholic and you know, there was a lot of that. And then I wasn't the daughter they wanted me to be. So it was like, I had to deal with that heartbreak too, that disappointment. Where, siempre que mi papá toda la casa tomado decía, siéntate, vamos a platicar. You know that saying? And I was like, oh my God. So I would run away to libraries. I would come here to the Central Library and spend hours until it closed. And then, like, go home with whatever friend I had made here and then, like, try to stay out as late as possible when I was, like, 18. And I always knew that I wanted to have a book on a bookshelf. Wow. In a library. I used to go to... I used to steal money from my job to go buy books at Barnes & Noble. It's been so long, they can't do anything now, so I could say... I could talk about it. But, like, I knew, like, I wanted my name on the spine of a book. Didn't know how it was gonna happen, when it was gonna happen, but that was had been my dream. And people had tried to talk me out of it. My dad was just like, agarra un trabajo que siempre vas a tener. Si eres maestra, siempre vas a tener trabajo. Dad, I hope you know that you were wrong. But, because the way that teachers are treated in this country is not, it's not it. It's, if you are an educator here, thank you for your work. And I'm sorry, we're so awful to you. You know, thank you. But yeah, so yo siempre, desde niña, desde que aprendí a escribir a los 6 años, a escribir así palabras y letras, siempre estuve escribiendo historias, poesía, siempre andaba yo con hambre de saber más, de contar cuentos, de nací chismosa. Mm. You know, nací lista para hablar y... I took a lot of little roads. I thought I was going to be a nun at some point.
Oh, you've told me that. Yeah, yeah.
I just knew that my job was to service my community. And it was going to be through my storytelling. There was a moment there that I thought Jesus was going to be involved.
Yeah.
Boys happened, and I was like, oh, I love you, but... Lo que el cuerpo quiere, el cuerpo quiere. But no, my dream had always been to be a writer, and I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so valuable what you mentioned about a lot of your dreaming took place in the library. And I can say the same for my experience as well, is, you know, through books is how a lot of us escape living in homes with a lot of historical trauma and machismo or toxic masculinity. And, you know, I just to see how much libraries provide for communities and even why we're all here, essentially. And, you know, so much gratitude for all the staff and all the people working in libraries, because it's truly a gift for communities.
Absolutely. I mean, just before we came out here, I was reading the tweet to you. A librarian in the IE, Carlita, I don't know, I didn't catch your name, but was saying that, like, they have a copy of Corazon and how there's always a waiting list for Corazon, and how that particular copy that she took a picture of having checked out over 100 times in that library. Thank you. And this isn't, like, it's easy to be like, I did that, you know, but that's not what it is. Like, every time I hear something like that, it just makes me so excited, because I remember how tenía mi papá, pues no teníamos dinero, right? Like many of us with my grandparents, they're just working hard to get by, right? So mi papá nos decía, pónganse los zapatos, eran las bicicletas. Y nos íbamos caminando desde Silver Lake a la biblioteca on Santa Monica, like near Santa Monica in Vermont. The Cahuenga Branch Library. So we would go walking all the way to the library. And then my dad would let us loose in the library. He never checked what we were reading. I was reading like a manual on how to make out, like, and I was like 11. I didn't have anybody to kiss, but I was just like, if I rub my feet on the carpet with socks, when I kiss them, it's gonna give them electricity.
Oh my God. Girl.
But like, libraries are places where you come and dream, and you could be like the weird kid, you know, like.
Yes. Definitely.
Feed all of that, right?
I remember there was a spot where I would wait for my dad to pick me up from the library. That library closed at 9 p.m. So I loved it. And it's facing the Mission Hotel in downtown Riverside. So that was always my way of, like, dreaming, like, oh, you know. And afterwards, we would go get Krispy Kreme donuts, because they had buy a dozen, get the other dozen for free. And it was just those memories. And now that is art gallery for Cheech, right? But anyways, I wanted to ask, how has your writing changed your relationship with your body?
It's made me walk my talk, right? Porque es fácil ponerse de chingona cuando uno está en la computadora, like, I love my body. Worship my, like, what I have that poem is like, I want you between my folds of skin, the place where the sun doesn't see, like, it's one of my lines in my poems. And then, like, I look at the poem, I'm like, do I want him there? And I'm like, I told this fool, and now he's here, and well, I guess let's go, you know? So it's During lockdown, give it up for Monica, my dear friend and manager. She hates it, but give it up for her. she's both of our dear friend. I would call her and I'd be like, I peaked. Because I would be watching videos of me performing and be like, I'm never going to have this again. I don't feel like I wasn't in my body anymore. Like, I had disassociated with my body. And I was dealing with a bunch of other things. And, you know, I'm 38. The body starts, you wake up, like, Cristela Alonso just had a special. She's like, I woke up and I had, my wrist was injured. Like, I just woke up. And I'm like, girl, I woke up one day, my leg was just like, no. You know, but anyway, so I was going through all of that, like, in 2020, and I had to reread my own work and, like, remind myself that, like, the poems, yeah, they get consumed by everybody, but I am my first audience. Like, I'm writing, most of my writing, mm-hmm. unless, like, I've been commissioned or something, most of my writing is a reaction for me to, like, deal with whatever it is I'm going through in that moment, because that's why I taught myself to write. When I was having, I had an undocumented mother, an alcoholic father, I had relatives coming in and out of the house. Like, I had all kinds of, like, chaos in my childhood. And the one way that I was able to, like, take control of everything was writing it down. Mm-hmm. And that's what's always been, like, I wrote these poems for myself. I don't know how y'all got here, but you got here. and I share them with you, and so the way that where the art comes for me is in the ways that I share it with y'all. But before that, I'm very selfish with my work. All my books, when I'm writing, when I write the poems, I'll share them, I get feedback or whatever, but I'm writing a book, I don't talk to anybody about it. I don't show I'll talk about it to people, but I don't show the book to other people because I don't want any other voices in my head. Because I'm a people pleaser. So if you tell me, oh yeah, this is weird, then I start thinking, I'm like, is the whole book weird? Do I need to rewrite the whole, you know? And so I think just rereading my work and remembering why I wrote it, and most of the time I'm talking to myself. It sounds like I'm talking to my audience, but it's to me like, you know, why are you crying, dumbass? It's me. I'm talking to myself. I'm not talking to y'all. But like, you receive it that way, you know? And then like, it's how I approach everything. And so my own work and my relationship with my body has forced me to be as bold as I write that I am. Because you don't always show up like that, right? Like, you don't always show up as head bitch in charge of NPP, right?
No. I'm like, I'm retiring from that girl boss thing. I just want to eat tacos, be fed tacos.
It's
true. So you've said like you've experienced like not being connected to your body, and it seems like writing is that entrance or that bridge to kind of just process everything that's taking place. And what other ways has writing shifted your relationship with your body?
I think it's because I grew up with abuse being so normalized in my household. I forget. So I could be with somebody that is being not the best partner, a toxic partner. I've had abusive partners or whatever. And then if you give me enough time, I'll forget. And I'd be like, I wonder what he's doing. Right? But if I wrote it down, I can go back and read it and be like, girl, are you okay?
Yeah.
Because you wrote down, you wrote exactly, well, there's a poem in Corazon called The Burning, if anybody's ever read it. And it was a relationship where I was with a Capricorn. I know. I got it out, sorry. But I was in with a Capricorn. Anyway, so it was this person I was in a relationship with, and the relationship became very, very emotionally abusive, right? But because in the moment I know what's happening, in the moment I know what's right and what's wrong and what I should be expecting from somebody and what I shouldn't. But then I go home and something happens where I'm just like, was it that serious? Maybe I just didn't explain things to him well enough, or I need to have more patience with him.
You gaslight yourself.
Yeah, and so then I have these guys that I could pick up and be like, oh, no. Mm. No, that's not what it is. And to be able to, like, sometimes I have to sit there and read through, like, I have tabs, like, named after relationships. And I have to sit there and read through, like, all the poems that I wrote in the relationship when it was ending to remind myself how painful that was and how I had to claw myself out of it. You know, and so I think for me, what it comes down to is that my writing is how I archive myself, and yeah. I don't throw anything away. So just because things don't make it into books or whatever, they still sit in my Google Drive, and I go back to them, and I'm like, damn, like, sometimes I'll be like, girl, he wasn't worth it. You were sprung over that, you know? Wow. And then other times I'm just like, oh, I can see my patterns. And I see how all of this is. And so when I go to therapy, I have all the evidence and be like, look.
So what's your, ¿cómo es que tú escribes? ¿Es algo que haces todos los días o tienes temporadas? ¿Y cuándo es los momentos en que tú sientes la inspiración de escribir?
So para mí la inspiración siempre viene como una emoción. Puedo ser sentada en la casa y de repente siento como a squeeze to the heart. It could be a song that made me feel something. It could be a scene or something I'm watching, an interaction I observed, and all of a sudden I have a strong feeling that I need to articulate and put down somewhere, right? And that's how it begins sometimes. I will tell you, I used to be a lot more prolific than I am now. Like, escribía con más frecuencia antes, pero creo que en el... Y cuando hablo de antes, era antes de que me dedicara completamente a hacer esto como una carrera. What they never teach us is that when your form of expression becomes your career, you got to replace it with something else. Yeah. Because it's not going to exist in the same way anymore. Mm-hmm. And I quit my job in 2016, October. In March 2017, I signed the contract for Corazon. When my publisher was just like, when can you give me the manuscript? I go, give me a month. Because I don't know what was wrong with me. I go, give me a month. So then I put the book together in a month, right? I didn't write physically everything. But I put it together, and then, like, I released it, right? And then after that, we released the book, and then I was just like, I'm ready for the next one. We did the Soda, came out exactly a year later. And then I go, I have one more left in me. Like, for right now, you know? And so then I'm like, let's do a trilogy. I don't got anything else going on, right? But I was like, the pressure, and I was, before that, I was working jobs where, like, being a workaholic gets applauded, right? Like, for those of us que tenemos padres que son inmigrantes y todo, el trabajar es como te justificas tu valor, tu lo que tú te mereces, ¿verdad? Y mi papá siempre, él iba a trabajar aunque estuviera enfermo. Mi papá estaba en diálisis. On dialysis, iba a trabajar. Mi papá trabajó hasta que ya no pudo caminar. Hasta que ya no se puede levantar para él ir a trabajar. Trabajaba con calentura, sudando. Y si yo decía, oh, no voy a ir a trabajar, se enojaba. Like, he would be so pissed if I would, like, want to call out of work. So I had that work ethic in me. And that's what I was doing with my poetry. And so then when everything shut down in March of 2020, I was so depressed because I had nothing to validate me. And so my poetry became that for me. Like, it was my validation. And then it affected the relationship. So where I had to relearn how I would have this relationship with poems again. And I don't write as often as I used to. And sometimes I get sad over it because I'm just like, I used to write all the time. But also, I will tell you this, I'm not in trauma right now. Like, I mean, we all are on some level, right? But like, I'm very happily single. So there's nobody, like, terrorizing me. There's nobody terrorizing me. My life is pretty chill. And, like, you know, and so then I'm like, damn, do I only write when I'm sad? So I'm figuring that out right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yo digo, cuando yo escribo es para destriparme. ¿Cómo dice? Gusanarme. Like, just let it all out. So I feel like what you're saying, que ahorita ya no estás escribiendo como antes, es porque ya estás en un lugar diferente y mejor.
Yeah, it's my life right now is, I mean, there's stresses and there's stuff, and I'm dealing with accepting that nothing was what it was before, in good ways and in bad ways, right? And so I think part of me didn't want to write because if I write it, it's real. Mm-hmm. If I write it, it's really, really real. Like, I just did a little, I'm not going to minimize it, sorry. I did a zine that I released last week, right? This zine is called Sticky, after Drake's new release. And it's a callback to another book that I had done that was called Woes. Anyway, long story short, I allowed myself to talk about this relationship I ended a year ago. But I knew that if I wrote about it, I had to accept that it was over. Like, that it was final package put away. And so, like, I wasn't writing. I wasn't writing about it. I wasn't writing about all the feelings that I felt with that, because I felt that if I did, it was either going to invoke him again or it was really going to, like, put the nail in the coffin and say goodbye forever. And so this month I turned 38, and I was just like, all right, it's time for goodbye. And so I wrote it, and it's goodbye. And I'm like, okay. So hopefully I start writing some more and the next book will come up sometime soon. But yes. Quédense pendientes.
Nice. How has your writing and the changes in your career impacted your dating life?
If they know I'm a writer, they're scared of me. Like if they know me as Jessica Salgado, not Jessica, they're like, oh, you're gonna post it on your Instagram, oh, your mangoes. I'm like, yeah. Pórtate bien. They'll get you. So there's that. And then also I overshare. Oh God, I overshare. I don't know how not to overshare. So then these fools get scared. But I figure, like, when I was sitting here the last time in 2019 was Fred Hermosa's book release. It was in this theater. And a crush of mine was here. And I told Monica, I was just like, if he doesn't fall in love with me today, because I'm magical when I'm on stage. And I don't know how else, like, if this doesn't work, it's never going to work. It didn't work. So I still haven't given up hope. But to say that being a public figure is hard to date because men are intimidated by my power. And I can imagine that you experience the same thing, too. There's a lot of passive aggressiveness, like, you're Jessica Salgado, you get whatever you want. Not really. I still got to pay rent. You know, like, I still got to... I went to Universal Studios. Nobody let me cut line of anything, you know? But so I tend to, and then I use the dating apps, and I don't tell them what I do until after fun things have happened. I think we're supposed to, like, take questions from the audience now, or? There's going to be a microphone coming around. Please keep your mask on for the, you know... What's that microphone? There's a hand over here.
Thank you. Hi, thank you so much. It's definitely a pleasure getting to meet you. I'm an educator, very proud. I'm an immigrant. You know, you put a little dig there on educators, but I have to tell you, it gave me a house, it gave me a child, and it gave me the opportunity to travel around the world. So I feel like being educated is definitely within the Latina community, very important. I love the way that you found writing to be your self-therapy. And that's sometimes what many of us have difficulty discovering, what's our own self-therapy. And within as being a Latina, as being a person of color, we need to find those venues. So I kudos to you, because that's not, it's not easy. But as I hear you talk and embrace and love your body, I also think, and this is where I find myself with a contradiction, when I see our community with diabetes, with dialysis, with heart problems, and women are dying at a higher rate than any other group of color. What message is then? Do you know what I mean?
The message is that we live in a world where there's systemic oppression that causes all those things that I won't be able to stop with a poem, but I can stop someone from hating themselves. And that's what my job is. Because we are all worthy of loving whatever body we're in whatever state, whatever illnesses exist in us, whatever conditions exist in us, because the hatred for my fatness has harmed me a lot more than my fatness has harmed me. Multiple times. I've received poor medical care for things that had nothing to do with my fatness. It took me years to find out that I have an infertility issue that has nothing to do with my fatness. So my fatness was blamed for my miscarriages. I had 3 miscarriages and was told that it was my fault. Not that my uterus doesn't produce the mucus that it needs to produce for the children to stay inside of me. I have been shamed at every corner for the body I have. I have been left out of gigs. I have been snubbed by people at every single turn. So in my world, as a fat woman who experiences all of those issues of diabetes, hypertension, dialysis exist in a systemic system that I can't dismantle on my own. But you know what I can do? I can make every woman and every person in this room feel seen, feel heard, feel like they're worth fighting for, and collectively we could dismantle the things that keep us in those unhealthy situations. And also let's remember too that the BMI scale and all of those things were all based on racist terms. So if we can't see, and thank you so much for being an educator. It wasn't a dig towards educator, it was a dig of how our country treats educators, right? And so if I'm you will always hear me. I speak at colleges for a living, and I'm always encouraging people to pursue whatever it is that they've been called to pursue. And if you're getting an education, it's your job to bring it back to your community. But if you see a fat person talking about self-love and you see that to be a problem, there's something that you need to correct internally before projecting it out. Can we move to the next question, please?
Do you think that romantic love oppresses women?
Yes. Yes and no. Yes and no. I think love and romance are beautiful. And we all have the right to experience it in whatever way. I think that as a Latina, growing up on novelas and growing up in and growing up in a machista household, the notion of romance is dangled to keep you in servitude to men. So you're told that if you love a man, you're going to take care of him, right? And I'm speaking in binaries here. It spills into other things, but I only know I'm straight. So I only know that, you know? If it ever changes, we'll have a party. But as of so far in my life, I've only been with men, and I feel that romance and the way that this capitalist country has turned it into, I mean, not only, like, I think in the world, can be kept, it can be told to keep women in servitude and to keep women docile, right? I've had a lot of women to be like, do you really want to say all that on the internet? Because then someone's not going to want to date you. And I'm like, well, I'm going to say all of this at my house. So, right? Like, have you ever had anyone like try to tell you like that your work will scare away men from loving you?
Not really, because a lot of my work doesn't really get to men, unfortunately. And fortunately, you know, both ways. But I do feel that people experience that. I know that that's what they're thinking, and like, oh, a girl with an eating disorder, you know? I do think people think, but I don't get that. There's really not even guys on my DMs on the Nalgona page.
I'll send you some of mine if you want them. Because when people are like, you know, are you worried someone's going to want you? I'm like, what do you mean by want? Like, physically want me? My DMs are overflooded. And that's not a compliment, right? But when it comes to relationship, like, I'm not in a hurry to find the man that sees this life I've built for myself and wants to bring his beautiful life to share with mine. And if that's not what we're doing, no, thank you. I've had all the others, right? And if I wanted that, I could just call up any of the exes that show up every now and then and be like, hey, baby. Okay, I don't know how we're on time, pero.
Hey.
Hello.
It was amazing to hear you. I'm curious. I'm Salvadorian. Just want to let you know that.
Hello. Hola, prima.
My sister has your hair.
There we go.
But I'm really curious, you know, entering fatphobic, discriminatory places like the doctor's office, like Universal Studios, right, where you don't fit in every single ride. I'm curious as to, like, how do you take up space and how do you self-advocate?
I think a long time ago I told myself, this is the body I'm in, for better or worse. I tried to beat it into a thinner body with eating disorders, with other things. didn't happen. So this is who I am. And I am worthy of joy, right? I am worthy of joy no matter what I am. I took my family to Universal Studios for my niece's 11th birthday. That was her little birthday wish. And it was just like, pay for all of us. Be my human wallet. Anyway, so we went and I rented a scooter to get around because I'm running around with kids and my sister and my brother-in-law and my other sister. And so I was in my scooter and I could have been sad that I couldn't get into some of the rides. But you know what I did? I went to go explore when they were on rides. And so I was hauling ass on my little scooter all around Universal Studios, just like fucking with the characters and stuff, you know? And it's like, so I find joy in where I can, you know? I use a walking cane sometimes, you know? And that was hard when I started using it to explain to, because folks are like, what happened? And then they start making it a fat thing. And then I was just like, no, what happened was that I me lastimé, you know, like, it, whatever. And also, I don't owe you any explanations, right? And so I went to a thing. Everybody was asking me questions. I cried in the parking lot. I had, like, a whole, like, moment. And then I went home, and the whole weekend, I was depressed, and I was just like, now I'm going to take some bomb-ass selfies with my cane. And so then I started taking pictures with my cane, and now it's just another accessory that I get to have with me, you know? And so, like, I find the joy. This is what I tell myself. Like, people are more obsessed with my fatness than I am. That's it. I don't give a fuck. I'm sorry. Pero a mí me vale. And I get around how I need to get around. And look at everything I've accomplished in this fat-ass body. And I'm not even done. And then the thing is that I get to change what people expect from fat people. I get to be that person that walks into a room and people don't think anything. And then all of a sudden, y'all come up to me. And y'all are standing around me at an event where, like, they didn't even want to invite me to. And to collectively, we show people how unconventional bodies are powerful. And that's where I find my joy. And that's how I move around. I still have a phobia with doctors because they've done me really dirty. And on those days, I take an edible. Okay.
Hi, Jessica. And hi, Blanca. I'm from Ida Loma, 909. Jessica, I was one of the people that came up to you at the other night at the Latino LA event. I was really happy that we were sharing that space. And I mentioned to you your TikTok compilations. And first of all, thank you for putting those together every week because then I don't have to get my own TikTok account. But I'm just curious how you put them together. Like, really, like, I would love to know because they're all, like, you know, they're either hilarious or they're like they're emotional or what have you. So I'm just wondering about like your creative process around compiling those and wanted to thank you for that too.
Thank you. So I'm very fortunate that I have friends and others that aren't in the room that have taught me to be a very intentional person, to be aware of why and how I do things, right? So it looks like I just be throwing things on my Instagram, but I'm like really thoughtful with what I share because I feel like I'm curating a space for you, right? And so the TikToks came where COVID and I'm home. And then I had my knee started not being friendly with me. So I was resting it a lot. And I was just scrolling on TikTok all the time. And then I kept putting things in my stories. And I saw how much y'all engaged with it. And not on some, like, my numbers or whatever. I don't care about that. But just how happy it made people. So then I moved it over to my in-feed post so that it could stay there. And so now when I'm curating, for those of you that don't know, TikTok is an app that has all these videos, right? And on Instagram, you can make a carousel where it has like 10 different posts in it. So what I do is I go through there, and if it makes me laugh out loud, if it makes me feel anything in my body, it's something I want to share with y'all because I genuinely consider my mangoes my friends. You know, like, I mean, yeah, we don't know each other and there's boundaries and all that. Cause I just have to say that cause there's always the one person that is just like, I'm your friend, you know? So I'm just like, we're friends, pero like with an asterisk, right? But I want to share things. I share so, I'm an open book with y'all. So why not share what I'm seeing in the internet? And so then when times like Roe versus, like you know, like Friday happened, where it gets really scary, I don't have the energy to put out a statement or to do something like that. And I have peers that are much more articulate than I am to do that. So I can make you laugh and I'll do that. I'll pull up a bunch of stuff from people. And then also I'm giving visibility to other creators because I always make sure that it's watermarked so that they have access to it. I mean, you do that too also on MPP. And like, how do you decide what you share on MPP? Because sometimes I'd be stealing them, like we'd be stealing them from each other.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm always reposting those TikTok videos on my page. And then sometimes I put my own song onto it, you know?
You, like, you get a little creative, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, esta canción va a estar más chistosito, so. You know, I do make my own content here and there, but that is so much work. And I'm like, there's already amazing accounts out there that are putting the information together. So I just do a lot of reposts. I feel like I'm more of an Instagram DJ, right? Like I just, you know, put other people's content like there. That.
We're DJs.
We are DJs.
Yeah, because like, yeah, I write poems, right? And like I post them and then I do like my little voiceovers and I post that and I post the stuff. But then after that, I'm like, hey, like I can't stand myself anymore. Let's look at other people, you know? And then, like, I like to throw some eye candy. I'm trying to diversify my eye candy, if you haven't noticed. So now I'm not only just putting cis straight men in there. Like, I'm, like, diversifying so that everybody could get a taco de ojo, you know? I said it's sad girl slutty summer, so get ready, y'all. All right, where are we? How are we?
We have time for one more.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you what brings you joy, but I feel you answered that. And now I have to check out your TikTok because I was going to ask you, like, what inspires you? What makes you happy? So I'm going to go to my another question, which is, what was the first book that you loved?
Oh, the first book I loved? Damn. I don't know which is the first. But I can tell you that Carmelo by Sandra Cisneros is the book that I bought the most times. And I stole the most times. I used to steal books from libraries, y'all. Don't kick me out. I never stole from you. But like my high school library, like I used to check out stuff and I take it back. It's okay, LAUSD can afford it. But Caramelo was a book that I bought over and over. I Know How the Caged Bird Sings was, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings was by Maya Angelou. It was the first time that I saw a person that wasn't considered conventionally beautiful talk about her ugliness. And I grew up feeling very ugly. And so when I found her, it gave words to that I felt. And I think Maya Angelou was, I think, the first writer who I wanted to read everything she wrote. And that's how, like, I was introduced into fandom in writing. My favorite novelist is Isabel Allende. Of her books, my favorite book is Eva Luna. So much that when I used to catfish, my name was Eva Luna. And, because it's a girl that tells stories. So I was telling them, but they don't read, so they don't know. But yes. So Isabel Allende, Sandra Cisneros, Julia Alvarez, How the Garcia Girls Lost Their Accents, reminds me of me and my sisters. We didn't migrate here, but still, like, the cultural differences and all that was really beautiful. Yeah, 100 Years of Solitude. I don't usually shout out men, but 100 Years of Solitude was really a defining book for me. And I'll leave it with this. I often get asked about how my voice became so loud and how I became so unapologetic with it, right? And I think part of the trick is, and this isn't to say for those of you that get riled up when I talk about anti-college or anything like that, I'm not anti-higher education. I just know how it's been turned into a business and right? But also, I've met so many writers that were taught to doubt their own voices in college through their MFA programs, where they were forced to read nothing but white writers. And so now they got to tell themselves that they are worthy of writing their story after they've been reading nothing but people they have nothing to do with, right? And then here I am where I, because I didn't go to college and it did make my life a lot more difficult in many ways, but I read whoever the hell I wanted. So I would go to bookshelves and pull out people that had last names of people that were familiar to me, right? Or I would look, and if the writer was brown or black, I was going to read it. I had a Charles Bukowski period, but we don't talk about that. But yeah, and then I'll just let Gloria tell us what was your first favorite book, and then we'll wrap up.
The Bible, because I was Jehovah's Witness.
I was there with you, girl.
I know. But then I used to be an avid reader in high school, and I wasn't as politically, you know, intentional as you were, but I loved S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders so much, and just the fact that her book got published when she was right out of high school, when she was 18.
So now this is like my I'm a writer answer that I gave, right? But like when I was like in middle school, yeah, por ahí, I was reading Babysitter's Club. I was reading a bunch of white girls babysitting people. And I was just like, I don't get paid when I take care of my sisters. But yeah.
Yeah, my sister had those in the house, but she's 5 years older than me. So and then I got into Marilyn French. She is a second wave white feminist, but one of her books is titled Her Mother's Daughter, and it talks about like 3-4 generations of women. And that book, I remember, that's the first book where I had that, where I didn't want to finish the last 3 pages. I postponed it as much as I could because I knew when it was going to be over, it was going to be over, and I was not going to have that moment anymore. So it was that book and my sister had that book, and then that's how I started reading it. But that's the main 2. Oh, and some Harlan Coben, like mystery stuff too.
Yeah, books. I think for a lot of us that didn't have resources to have like big adventures or go on family vacations, it was only a book. Like, you know, give me a book and I would go into my bunk bed and put up a cobija and listen to oldies, and I was there crying my eyes out to Sweet Valley High. Anyway, thank you so much for having us. Thank you so much, Gloria, for joining me. I love you so much. And Jessica's back.
I'm back. Thank you all for being here. And thank you guys so much for a terrific conversation. And very funny, too. Jessica will be signing in the lobby. Keep your masks on. Her 3 books are out there. And we have a cultural food kind of extravaganza program at Skirball on the 17th of July. We'd love you all there. Thank you for being here. Take care. Have a good night.
Aloud is made possible by the Hearst Foundation, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, the Los Angeles County Department of Arts and Culture, Errant Fox, City National Bank, the Los Angeles Public Library, and additional generous supporters of the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. To support programs like this, become a member at lfla.org.